Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Film Fellows.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm April.
No, you're not.
Whoa, sorry. I'm Dean from the Books Boys. Is this a crossover?
Yes, it is.
We got ourselves the crossover. So we got the Books Boys, or I guess today, possibly the Film Fellows. And we've got the two chicks talking flicks. But we've got one boy and one chick.
Yes, we are half and half here today. We've lost part of our crew. So it's just one chick talking about a flick. And we have a film boy.
We have one film boy. PJ was going to come. He's on a mountain retreat unexpectedly. So you gotta put up with this kind of thing, you know?
April is in my living room sleeping.
I love it. So, Sarah, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about the book and the movie Psycho.
Psycho. So yes. This is one of the few things, not the few, I mean, obviously there are some, but this is one thing that I think is equally a classic as a book and a movie.
Yeah, yes. I had never read it. I had never watched it. I'd only heard about, you know, obviously I knew the big twist at the end, heard about that, seen the shower scene. But other than that, I really didn't have a basis of what this movie or the book was about. And I enjoyed both of them.
So I did read the book about a year ago, and I'd never had a clue what it was about either. And then for this, obviously, I reread it. But I think my copy of the book is actually made, you know, after the movie, because on the back, it just says she stepped into the shower stall. So they know that was the big scene in the movie, and they've just put that on the back of the book. You know, that's all it says.
Oh, weird. Yeah, I tried to find an original copy of the book, because all the ones I kept finding had the new cover, and I was like, I don't want this one because it could be more as the same as the movie, and I wanted to make sure I had the original, everything that they said and did, whatever.
Yeah,
the original.
Yeah. I mean, and that shower scene is the big thing, and I suppose that's something we can mention straight away, because it's not even a spoiler. Everyone knows about the psycho shower scene.
Yeah.
Did you think from reading the book that it was a standout moment, or is that really only from the movie? Because I think it doesn't really stand out that much in the book.
Yeah, no. I think it's more from his point of view of watching it happen, through his little peephole.
Yes.
That that's a bigger thing than the actual stabbing. But in the movie, yeah, it definitely is the big thing. And actually, when watching the movie and watching the shower scene, it wasn't that bad. She wasn't bleeding that much. She didn't look like she really got stabbed that much. And I was just like, why is she dying? And why isn't her hands bloody all down the shower?
It's not the most realistic stabbing
no.
I've ever seen.
Mm-mm. It was pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's because there's two stab scenes in the movie, and neither of them look really very realistic or nothing's happening. But we get some arm flailing, and we get and you know that it's the stab scene. But
yeah, it was not as convincing as I remember my mom talking about it, and how scary and gory and all this stuff, and I watched it and I was like, seriously, that was it? Okay.
Yeah, it's I actually watched it with my girlfriend, and she was really, really disappointed with the shower scene, because first of all, she thought it was actually the climax of the book. It was the, you know, it was going to be the ending. And we watched the movie, and it's not, like, it happens pretty early. And it's quite disappointing. Yeah. She was like, well, turn this off, this is garbage.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay. Well,
but, you know, maybe if you were watching back in 1960, like, maybe it was scary then. I don't know. I would imagine not, though, because they had a lot of, you know, Frankensteins and Draculas and things back then. So I would think this still couldn't have been all that scary.
Yeah, it was. I was like, well, all right. Me and my grand, I watched it with my grandpa, and he had seen the movie a long time ago. He really liked the movie. And so we were watching it. And all I just kept thinking is, that is not enough blood for her to have died.
Yeah, it's really not. Now, did you notice the big difference in that scene in the book and the movie in how she dies?
Yeah, I didn't know that there was a difference.
Because in the movie, as we said, it's some flailing and a few unrealistic looking stabs. But in the book, I mean, she cuts off her head.
Yeah. I was like, I know that there's a difference.
Yeah, it's a beheading in the book, which was severely toned down for the movie.
Yeah, like, and I kept thinking, how are they going to find her earring? This wasn't as much of a stabbing, you know, because doesn't the earring like fly off? And I was like, how are they going to find that and know that she was here?
Yeah, because in the book they find the earring behind the shower stall or behind the sink or something like that, don't they?
Yeah.
Whereas in the movie they don't. They just find like some paper that she flushed in the toilet or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big difference. So, I mean, what do you think we should do? Should we go back to the start and kind of give a quick synopsis of how this actually plays out for anyone that hasn't seen it?
Yeah, let's do that.
Cool. So what did you think about the beginning of the movie? So the early scenes in the movie are quite different from the book. We get Marion, or Mary in the book, and we get a scene of her with Sam, with her lover. Yeah. And straight away I thought, well, this is different from the book, because in the book they aren't really together. They're not meeting up for illicit, you know, hotel meets once a month or whatever. They haven't seen each other in a very long time.
Yeah, because like in the book, they met on a cruise, right?
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that was in place of the cruise, you know, like, oh, yeah, this is the meeting up. But yeah, it was much different. And I didn't feel sympathy for this version of her in the movie as you do in the book.
Exactly. I think she is more sympathetic in the book.
Yeah.
And the book's kind of weird because the movie's more realistic in the sense that, you know, these two guys that are this guy and girl, you know, they want to marry eventually. They're meeting up in the hotel on her lunch break. I could see that happening.
Yeah.
Whereas in the book, they met on a cruise in like 2 years ago or something, and they exchanged letters and that's it. You know, and they're going to marry and they're building their entire future life around each other. They haven't seen each other in like a year.
But in the movie, it seems like she actually likes him. In the book, it seems like she is just with him because she has no other options.
She didn't know what else to do. Yeah, I think so.
And, you know, like, he seemed like a really nice guy. And I didn't know why her resistance to being with him in the book. But yeah, in the movie, they seem to really have a better connection.
They do, yeah. And I think they mentioned in the movie that he was previously divorced. I don't remember that in the book. I know he had a lot of debt, and that was his reason for not marrying her. He wanted to clear his debt first before marrying her. Yeah, I don't know why, but I guess it's as good a premise as anything for a story. Well, I do have debt. Just give me 7 years to clear it, and then we can be together.
I mean, hey, I would like a guy who's financially sound, you know, and stable and good with his money, and if he's able to pay off his debts like that, like,
yeah, I mean, you know what, I would stay with him. But I know that in the 60s the population was a little bit lower than now, but you gotta think there was someone there that she didn't have to wait years for, you know?
Yeah. Or, you know, can actually see
can see more than once a year, you know.
Yeah. Very strange. And like the very beginning of the book, when we meet Norman, is way different than in the movie. like, he's sitting there creepily reading this book, and, like, you know, obviously they did it because they didn't want us to know that his mother was, spoiler alert,
we're gonna give away the big spoiler, so his mother's not alive.
But, you know, his, like, in the book, they have him as, like, a plump face with glasses, thin hair. And I remember seeing, like, you know, just clips in the movie or whatever, and knowing that Norman was, like, a tall, lean, he was kind of charming in the movie.
Yeah, like, in the movie, I mean, he's a little bit geeky, maybe, but other than that, he looks and acts more or less normal at times, you know.
Yeah.
In the book, he's a bit weirder. He's got some alcohol issues. He's very perverted. They mention about half a dozen times that he's really overweight. You know, it's quite a different character, actually.
Yeah, and I don't think that Norman would have been able to talk to a Mary. Like, he stammers and stutters when he talks to her. But this one, he was charming. He was, you know, very cute, and, like, she kind of was into it, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's interesting. Maybe they just thought that would kind of play out better on screen. You know, that's what people were more used to. You know, maybe they didn't want to see a film with this kind of awkward, unattractive guy or something. You know, I don't know.
And also, if they had a guy who looked more like that, that was plump and with glasses and stammered and stuff, he might be more, like, noticeable as the villain, versus if you have a charming, good-looking guy, people are like, oh, well, it's not him. He's too good-looking to be
a good point, yeah.
A murderer.
Or that's psychopath. A great point, actually, because that's quite typical in movies, especially older movies. You know, the good-looking guy can't be the killer, you know?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. At what point did you realize what was actually going on?
Well, because I, you know, knew, but I will say, when I was reading it, I said, is his mom already dead? ? That was, like, in the first, like, couple chapters. So I was like, okay, so it's him talking to her and she's not there. So I was like, okay, so she's already dead. But I wasn't quite sure.
Wow, I didn't pick up on that at all, like, until the reveal at the end. Like, I just went with everything as it presented itself to me.
Well, you know, like I said, I'd heard about the movie and heard about the plot twist, so I kind of knew about it, but, you know, I wasn't sure when it happened and, like, what the timeline was. You know,
yeah, now, fair enough.
The whole thing about when and where and how his mother died, I didn't know about that. So that one kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah, that's fair. I didn't even pick up on it, to be honest, you know, on my first reading. So yeah, in terms of the plot, I mean, they do start very differently. So the movie starts with Marion, and she's at work, and she, you know, first of all, we have the scene in the hotel, then we have the scene with her at work, and she takes the $40,000. I feel a little bit less sympathy for her in the movie, as you said. I think she's a bit meaner in the movie or something. Like, I,
yes,
you know, when she steals the money, you're kind of like, well, I don't know if I like you.
Exactly. Then, it's just,
yeah,
she's kind of bitchy, but I will say the work conditions kind of suck as well, because they're supposedly in Texas. I think that's where she is. I know in the book,
so
she's from Texas, and it is really hot. Like, right now it is sweltering outside. So to work in a building like that's brick like that, that is old and doesn't have AC everywhere, it would be really hot. And I would hate the living or working conditions. And then her boss has an AC office. Like,
I didn't even notice that. Wow.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, because he tells his friend, well, let's go into my office. There's AC in there.
Oh, right. Because we don't really have air conditioning in the UK or Ireland, that sort of passed me by. I didn't kind of pick up on that difference, you know, between her working conditions and his.
Yeah.
I was more struck by the fact that she has to put up with the client, like, just this kind of sleazy, flirty, horrible rich guy who's, you know, basically trying to buy her off and impress her with his money. And in the book, it's a bit more direct. He offers her $100 to spend the night. In the movie, they don't specifically say that, but
yeah,
the sleaziness is still there.
Oh yeah, for sure. And like the way that he's just throwing his money around, and you know, obviously they're doing illegal stuff, so the fact that she steals the money, they really, obviously that's why they don't get the cops involved, because they know that it was legally obtained.
Yeah, like he mentions, I can't remember if it appears in the book, but in the movie he does mention that he's not paying his taxes, or he like kind of makes a joke, or you know, yes, the other girl says, well, I do declare, and he says, I don't, that's why I get to keep it. So.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, in the movie, it seems like she knew exactly that she was going to take that money and run.
Yeah.
But in the book, it's more like, I could just take this money.
Right?
Yeah. I could just like take this and I could go and I could like help Sam pay off his debts, and then we could be together and I could be out of here.
I mean, what I always want when I'm going to get together with someone is that I have to pay them $40,000 first. Like that's a great way to go into a relationship, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Whereas the book starts totally differently, as we sort of said. We have a lot of stuff about Norman. I mean, in the book, Norman is the main character, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about him. It's him at the hotel, the scenes of him talking to his mother. Mary's not really the main character at all. It's quite a different setup, actually. We see Norman, you know, and he's talking to his mom. There's a lot of scenes where she's putting him down, you know,
mm-hmm.
and treats him like a little boy. And there's even a bit where, can't quite remember exactly how far in this is, but there's a bit where he, you know, he offers to like fix a cot for her, a little bit, about a third of the way into the book, and he says, you know, you should essentially be put away into the you know, the insane asylum. And she says, yes, Norman, I suppose you're right, that's where I should be, but I wouldn't be there alone. So what I like about that is that type of dialogue, for me, preserved the facade that they were two different characters. Because, you know, you're seeing dialogue between them, whereas in the movie, you kind of don't. You never really see or hear much from the mum. Maybe there's some off-screen stuff, but I think that, you know, in a written format, it's a lot easier to preserve that for longer. Whereas in the movie, it's like, well, I haven't seen the mum, not really hearing from her. You get doubts a bit quicker, I think.
Yeah, because, like, at one point in the book, after Mary has died, his mom says, let the dead, or no, he says, let the dead bury the dead. And I put a hint, and like, you know, maybe that was because, like, he is thinking his mom killed her, and you know, now he has to clean up everything because she has killed her. And we don't know that his mom is dead. So I was like, oh, maybe that was like a hint, like, you know, the dead buried the dead.
Yeah, I guess that is a hint. And that's interesting. I didn't pick up on that. You know, maybe if I were to read it again, I would. But it's one of those things that, yeah, there probably are. You know, if you were to read it again after watching the film, or after, even after finishing the book and knowing how it ends, there probably are one or two little hints thrown in along the way that you don't necessarily pick up on, although it sounds like you picked up on quite a lot. You were very, very clued in with this one. I did not know what was happening at all.
Yeah.
So, well, let's say what actually happens, shall we? So we have Mary steals the money. The movie makes a whole big to-do about her doing the rental car business. You know, in the book, she swaps her car twice, and it's like one paragraph. The movie spends about 20 minutes, you know, with the cop staring at her and going to change her car. And I don't know why that scene's so protracted, you know, so extended, because we see the cop really interested in her, and then he never appears again for the rest of the film. So I don't know why we wasted time on that.
Yeah, it was very odd to me. I actually kind of hated that scene. It took way too long. It was too drawn out for no reason.
Yeah, it's not as if that cop returns later with a suspicion, you know. No, that's just gone. That whole part of the movie is irrelevant.
Yeah. Like, she fell asleep in her car. People do that. It's not a crime.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's strange. But then so she goes, she's going to meet Sam. She wants to stay over somewhere because it's dark and rainy and she's tired and whatever else. So she pulls into Bates Motel. And of course, Norman says, yes, you can have this cabin. That's grand. She pays for the night and they have some snacks in his house. And he's a little bit peculiar and he does taxidermy. And, you know, he says in the book that he's never sat at a table with a girl before. So she thinks, yeah, you know, okay, he's very shy. He tries to help her on with her coat and he's afraid to even touch her. He's never been around any women, really, you know, so he's a very awkward chap. But she then misinterprets that to think he's harmless.
Yeah.
And then the perversion comes in, the spying through the wall while she's undressing and having a shower and everything.
Yeah, the whole time, all I can think is, you don't see that hole? Like, you don't see a weird spot in the wall.
You'd think you would see, but maybe we think that now because we've seen this type of thing done in so many books and movies. You know, maybe back then, no one would have ever thought of that. But I don't know if I believe that, but, well, we'll give them that premise. That's very different. Okay, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, like, if I go into a hotel and it's not pristine, like, if there's, like, a random hole in there, I'm probably going to look through it and be like, why is this here? You know, that's just really odd, but hey, that's just
me. I mean, yeah, you would. But essentially what happens is quite interesting. So in the book, he drinks. In the movie, he doesn't. And
right,
it makes more sense in the book because the idea is kind of that he drinks himself into a stupor almost and doesn't really know what's happening. And then he thinks that his mom did it. In the movie, it's less clear how that happens, you know, when he's, as far as we can tell, very sensible of what's going on around him. But he looks through the peephole, and in the book as well, it gets a bit vile. He starts calling her, you know, a bitch, and he thinks that she's actually teasing him. And he gets angry at, you know, her morality for teasing him, even though she doesn't know he's there and he's peeking into her room and he shouldn't be there in the first place.
Exactly. And I had this thought, like, he said that they don't have a lot of people that come there. Does he kill every single person that comes to?
So I wondered that as well. I don't think so, because
I don't think so,
but it's unclear. Like, it's not really ever stated. You know, the only reason I don't think so is because near the end in the book, a lot of journalists come around and there's a little throwaway line that says something like, the journalist made it seem like he'd been doing this for ages, which made me think, okay, then he hasn't. But it's never really specifically stated that he has never done it before, you know?
Yeah, because he awfully knew how to clean that up real well.
Yes, and he did.
I want to know, like, how many cars are in the lake? Like, at some point, they're going to start stacking on top of each other. That's all I can think.
Yeah, it's very convenient. I don't know if this is a thing that happens in that, you know, around Texas or on that part of the States. We don't have that I've ever seen around where I live, that you can just have a weird kind of marshy ground or watery ground in your garden and just chuck a car into it and two cars into it. And there we go. No one's going to find that. I've never actually seen that happen.
Yeah, it seems like he must be on, like, some land that maybe has, you know, like a wooded area or, like, you know, I've seen places that are like that. Like, my aunt has, like, a little lake behind her house. But it's not enough to put a car in, but that does happen. You know, there's a lot of open land in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, fair enough. So that's believable enough then. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, what does he do? He goes into the room, dresses up, of course, as has Norma, his mum. We get the famous shower scene, kills her, does a quick cleanup job, pops the car, doesn't notice the $40,000 that goes in the car and gets tipped in the lake.
Yeah. If he had just known, he could have just left, you know?
He could have just left. He could have got away with it, left, and that would have been it. Like, you know, he got away with it and moved on to a better life and no one would have known anything.
Yep. Because, you know, she didn't put her name in the book. She put a different name when she registered in, so no one had even known.
No one would,
it wasn't
no one
would her car. Yeah, it wasn't her car, so she could have he could have left it there, run away with the money, and everything would have been fine.
Yeah, pretty much. And $40,000 at that time, I mean, they say it's enough to buy a house. So obviously with inflation and everything, that would be a lot more nowadays. So it's considered a substantial amount of money. In fact, in the movie, they say later, you know, you could use that $40,000 to build a new motel on a busier road. So that would have been enough money for him to really change his life with.
Yep.
But no, he stays at the motel, buries the money in the pond or the lake, and just tries to kind of put it off, really. You know, he hides the razor blades or whatever so that his mum, you know, can't kind of commit any more murders. And he thinks, you know, that's going to be the end of it. But of course it's not, because Marion's sister, Lila, I think it is, goes to Sam to say, you know, she's been missing for a week. She's taken the money. Has she come to you? Are you guys in some kind of conspiracy? And of course, Sam says, no, we're not. But then who turns up? A detective.
Mm-hmm.
Arbogast. That's a weird name. Arbogast.
Yeah, that's a weird name. Yeah, he comes in. He's investigating the crime of the stolen money. And they all think that Mary did it, which obviously she did. But they think that Sam's in it, and poor Sam, he's just like,
I know.
No idea what is going on. Poor guy.
I do feel for him, actually, because he knew nothing, and then people turn up to say, you know, your fiance has, you know, she's disappeared, she's stolen money, we don't know what's happening, and he just gets dragged into all the... One thing that's interesting that happens in the book, but not the movie, is when he sees the sister, he immediately kisses her.
Yes.
They look similar.
Yes, I was just about to say the same thing. And I actually felt like there was more chemistry between the two of them, especially in the book, than there is in the movie.
Do you think they get together in the book?
Yes.
I think so.
They do. Yeah.
Again, it's not made explicit, but there's a little bit where he says he regrets the whole thing, and she kind of goes, you know, everything? You know, like, I don't know. I'm just imagining that she's, you know, batting her eyelashes at him at that moment. You know, do you regret everything?
Like... You don't forget me, right?
I think they get together, but in the movie, I don't think there's not really a hint of that.
No. And that was actually one of my favorite parts. It's just like a weird romance in this strange murder movie.
Yeah. And it seemed like they knew a bit more about the same type of music, and like they almost had more in common. Whereas I think he had nothing in common with Mary. She was just a girl he met once. Like that was it.
Like how they even, what they even wrote about in their letters, who knows? Like,
what would you write about it when you have no idea about the other person's life? Like you have nothing in common.
Yeah. But definitely, because him and the sister seem to really click a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think the sister almost becomes, certainly in the movie, she becomes the main character. You know, she really takes over. She's trying to drive the investigation, you know, because we have Arbogast. He wants to do some stuff. The sheriff's not really interested in doing anything. Even Sam's quite apprehensive. He's quite, you know, small town, let's leave it and see what happens kind of vibe. She's like, let's go. Let's find out what's happening. Let's go after Mary. I want to track it down. Let's go to the police, you know.
Yeah.
And so what happens? Arbogast goes to see. He goes on a lot of stops, a lot of checks to see if he can find which motel she went to or hotel or wherever she has gone. And of course, he does eventually arrive at, last on his list, of course, Bates Motel. And he gets a clue then.
Yeah, and you know, I gotta give it to Arbogast, because this is before the internet. This is before cell phones. And he was able to like track her all this way and like find out how she would go, where she would be, what direction she might take. And I was like, that's pretty impressive for, you know, 1960s technology.
Yeah, it really was, actually.
And then when he doesn't have like cops behind him, you know, helping him, like, I don't know, he's very good at his job.
He does look like the archetype detective. Like, he's got the hat and the trench coat and everything, you know. But I don't know how he did it, to be honest. You know, I have no idea. But he does it. He tracks them down. And, of course, he goes and then he gets killed. So, spoiler. Yeah. But, the mother kills him as well. He decides, and in fairness, Norman tells him not to go near mother, but he refuses to listen. goes up the stairs and, you know, gets killed. Now, at this point, things are almost a little bit too convenient because Norman says, don't go up to Mother. And then when he finally says, well, I'm going to go up anyway, Norman says, I'll go up and let her know you're coming. And then that's so that Norman can, you know, put on the clothes and get the knife and whatever. You know, yeah. If he hadn't done that, if he hadn't said, I'll go up and get her ready, then he would have found that there was no Mother there. So I don't know if that's convenient or if it shows that Norman did know what was going on more than he is supposed to.
Oh, good point.
You know, because he's supposed to think that the mum's real. So in theory, he could have said, yeah, I'll wait here, off you go. You know, but it's almost like he knew.
Well, to be fair, he does say that his mother is sickly and is in bed. So maybe get her ready meant like put clothes on her so Abergast could go talk to her.
But... yeah, I mean, I guess it did work. It just kind of gave me that little hint like, if he hadn't gone up there, then the whole thing wouldn't have worked. But
yeah,
so we get our second stab scene. We get the again, and off goes Abergast. He's dead and in the lake.
Yep. Poor Abergast.
And that's it, right? There's no more murders.
No, there's attempted murder.
There's no one more murder. Attempt. Yeah, there's another attempt, but that's the last actual murder. So, I mean, at this point, the book is paced quite well. I think the movie's not paced that well because they spent so long on those irrelevant opening scenes that things kind of speed up quite a lot now in the movie.
Yeah.
And now Sam and Leela go to the motel themselves. You know, the sheriff won't help them, so they're the deputy sheriff or whatever he is. So they go themselves to try to see what's going on, essentially.
Yes. And then I put in my notes from the book, it says, so Norman lies to Chambers about Mom and Joe dying from poison. And then I put Norman knows they are lying. And I don't know why I put that or what that meant, but I'm thinking it must be for Leela and Sam that he knows that they're lying and they're not like staying there, I guess, or they're not. I don't remember why I put that.
I don't know.
But I know in the movie he knows that they're lying about just being, you know, together and going to the motel randomly.
He picks up on that straight away. Yeah.
So I was like, well,
I think he does in the book as well, actually. I think he does, but he gets a bit vile again. You know, he's like, liars, filthy liars, all of them, you know. And I think he means it about both of them, but I think mostly about her. I feel like he has a problem with women.
Well, yeah, because he has mommy issues, obviously.
Yeah, severe mommy issues.
And I think it's not him. I think when he sees them, and he, especially with Leela, that's his mom. Mom part of him is like, oh, they're filthy liars. Like, blah, 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 blah. Women are terrible.
Yeah. So you mentioned something that I suppose we should explain. He's lived with his mom in this motel pretty much his whole life. Dad's long gone. And the mom finds this man. Guy, you know.
Well, Uncle.
You said the name there. Uncle Joe, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to get married or whatever, you know, that's kind of how it's starting to look. I think he catches them in bed, possibly, and he kills them both.
Yes.
But of course, he then digs up the corpse because of the mum, you know, forget the uncle. But, you know, he kind of can't believe that that he can live then without his mum. Now, we don't find that out till the end. But the key thing is, he tells everyone that the guy just kind of left or whatever, and that the mum's still there. You know, and the sheriff is saying to Sam and Leela, well, that's not possible. Like, I was literally at her funeral. I carried her coffin. Like, she's definitely dead and buried.
Yeah.
And that's what creates a lot of confusion. Yeah. And they think, was Abergast lying when he said he was going to go see the mom? Like, what's going on? And it surprises me that this ruse went on for so many years. Like, at no point, because Norman talks to everyone who visits the motel about his mom. Like, did no one ever mention that in town? I don't know.
I guess because, like, you know, it's not a very popular place. Why would those people ever talk about because it doesn't seem like he interacts with any of them like he did with Miriam. So maybe they just like, oh, that guy is kind of creepy, and then they leave the next day and they don't tell anybody.
I guess that's the only thing that kind of makes sense. And, you know, because he's fully cognizant of the fact that his mom still lives there with him.
Yes.
And, you know, and the sheriff saying, no, you know, the mom's long dead. And of course, that's because he's dressing up as the mom. So then, of course, he tries to kill her, you know, and that doesn't work out. And they get him in the end and it's all fine. But what did you think of that reveal scene? Where in the movie, it's great, where the mom, you know, he hides her in the fruit cellar so that they don't find her. And Layla goes down and you just see the skeleton turn towards her when she like taps it on the shoulder. That was a really good scene.
Yes, it's really, really good. And I think I've seen that scene before because that's why I knew who the killer was.
Okay.
I think this has been on in the movie or on TV before, and I'd seen like that scene and I was just like, oh yeah, it's when the corpse turns around.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think if you'd seen that would give quite a lot away, actually.
Yeah,
that's fair enough. I want to kind of comment just on the pacing, because it's a short book. It's only 120 pages. It's a very short book. And, you know, you're trying to fill a movie that's, you know, 90 to 100 minutes or whatever. And you would think, okay, the pacing could be quite good. I just don't know why Hitchcock chose to spend so long on those weird opening scenes that went nowhere. And then everything speeds up. Now, he's supposed to be the master of suspense. You know, Hitchcock's a very successful, very famous director. I don't want to say he wasn't so good, because that's not fair. But I think this could have been done better.
What I think they could have used is having a little bit more background of Miriam and Layla's life, because, you know, she had to take care of her, because they don't talk about that in the movie, how their parents are dead and she's had to take care of her sister and all this stuff. That's why she steals the money and why she's going after Sam so much. And also, it would have been great if they had had like flashbacks of life with Norman and his mom from when he was little. And, you know, with like Joe, like her introducing Joe to him and us getting the sense of, okay, he hates this guy. I think that could have been the extra filler that would have lengthened the movie in like a good way.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I think that would have really helped.
Yeah. Because I've never seen...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I've never seen the show Bates. Which is about him, you know, Norman Bates in the hotel. But I'm sure if they'd made it nowadays, they would have had a lot of that stuff from the show, like more in the movie.
I think so, yeah. But maybe that's more of a modern thing. Like, I guess old movies didn't have that many flashbacks and things, you know?
Yeah.
That does happen a lot more nowadays. But I think you're right. I think it would have... you know, it would have gone some way to improving things a little bit. Because the pacing is weird. I mean, very, very end of the movie, after the reveal and everything, there's just like a weird 5-second clip of the car getting pulled out of the lake. And it's like, why did they even bother? While it says the end, we just see the car getting dragged up. And it's kind of like, yeah, you had to squeeze that in there. Like, you know, you're running out of time. You didn't need to waste 25 minutes on her changing her rental car.
Yeah. Well, and one thing I think they could have done is had the scene where, you know, if they did like a flashback, had it where Norman is there at his mother's funeral, but don't tell us it's his mother's funeral, just kind of like show him there at a grave, but like don't show us who the grave is for. And that might have been a little bit more like they're telling us, hey, his mom is dead. But
so that would have worked in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in the book they make it clear that Norman was actually in hospital during the funeral.
Yes.
But that's not made clear in the movie. So I think that would still work. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just him going back to the grave, you know, after grave
later. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, they might have thought it was his dad or somebody else or whatever, but they could have just had like a small little scene or something that teases you and you have to pick on it later.
Yeah, I think that would work. In terms of plot, the only other thing we have to mention is obviously the ending. So once they kind of find out what's going on, then the sheriff does show up or whatever. What do you think about the kind of psychological ending? You know, the movie gives us like a 5-minute speech, and I suppose to an extent the book kind of does as well. We do spend a good few pages on here's the ending, here's the psychology. It's not just that Norman's a transvestite, he likes to dress up or whatever. It's that he genuinely thinks he is his mum, you know, in those moments. But conveniently, you know, the movie does simplify it because we've got Norman and we've got Norma. But in the book, they make it clear that there's three different types. There's three personalities at work, because there's Norman acting submissive to the mother as a child, Norman.
Yeah.
Then there's the mother, Norma, doing the killings. And then there's what they call normal, which is the chap who actually goes about and runs the motel, you know, and speaks to customers like an adult. And there's those kind of three facades. I mean, which explanation do you think kind of works better?
I think the book.
Yeah,
I think the book works a little bit better, because in the beginning of the book, they talk, him and his mom talk about that, and he says like, she still treats me like a child, and you know, that kind of stuff, she won't let me read these books that I want to read and all of this. And that's like young Norman, submissive Norman, that's telling us about that, you know. And like,
the movie skips over that stuff, I think, doesn't it?
I even think that the submissive Norman is the one that's talking most of the time in the book versus normal Norman.
Yeah, maybe, you know, you might be right on that. Because I suppose in reality, the only time he needs to be normal is, you know, those moments when he's actually interacting with a customer or, you know, getting the linen changed or whatever. You know, the rest of the time when he is talking with his mom, he could be in child Norman, I suppose, you know. And again, it's not something that's ever kind of made clear, but yeah, I think you could be spot on with that.
Yeah. And one part that I did really like in the movie versus the book, I mean, they talk about it in the book, but when he's putting Abergast's car also in the lake, it stalls, or maybe it was Mary's, it doesn't matter, it stalls at one point, and he just does this like sigh, like crap, and then it starts to sink again.
It goes, it's in, just, yes,
it's just like this little moment where he's like, okay, it's going, and then it stops, and he's like, oh crap,
and then okay, it starts to sink again. What do you think? You're Norman and the car doesn't sink. What's your next move?
I don't know, I guess push it. I don't know what you would do.
I don't know, jump on and jump on top and jump up and down on the roof till it starts to sink. I don't know.
Because like, his whole plan is to do this, sink the car, and then he's going to go get his work truck, bring it down here because it's rained, and he's going to go over his tracks with his work truck so they know that it wasn't a different car. And I was just like, that, I wouldn't have even thought of that.
No.
Like that,
but he's doing it. He's pulling out all the stops because he thinks he's protecting his mother.
Yeah,
he doesn't even admit that he has done the murder. You know, so he's trying to think of everything he can possibly do to actually help her. And again, it makes more sense in the book. He was passed out drunk while the mom did the killing. You know, as far as he thinks.
Yeah, and so it's just like, how do you think of this? He's just like, I'm going to go down there the next day with my truck and I'm going to get this firewood. So then they'd have no idea that I was even down here. I'm just like, you know, you could just stop killing people. That would be.
Yeah. You see, I know where you're coming from. When you see that amount of cleverness coupled with how quickly and how efficiently he cleans up the mess, you think, you know, after the killing, you kind of think, has this happened several times before or not? You know?
Yeah, I even put in my notes that he would easily have gotten away or gotten caught nowadays with black lights and forensic science. Like, he was just using a mop, like didn't clean out the mop, just using the mop, mopping out the shower. And I was just like, you can't do that.
Yeah, there's nothing else. It is just a mop and some water, you know, and that's it. Like, well, I can't see any red liquid anymore. Guess that's the crime scene clean. So.
Yeah. And then I put the newspaper money. He missed it, then just tossed it in the truck. I go, he blew it.
Yeah, he did. That was his chance. And it's interesting in the movie that right up until, I think, 2 minutes before the film ends, They still think that he took the money. They only find out at the very end when this, you know, the psychiatrist tells them, oh no, he wasn't interested in that at all.
Yeah. It wasn't about the money. But see,
having said that, he still might have taken it if he'd known about it. But, you know, Sam and everything and Layla, they still think that he's taken the money right to the end. And no, he didn't even know about it.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing. In the book, they do a much better job of why Norman kills her. I think in the movie, they don't really show why he was so upset, because his character is a different kind of persona than he is in the book. In the book, he's meek and stuttery and stammering and, you know, a nerd and unsure of himself.
Yeah.
And so he feels like she thinks she's better than him. And, you know, like that's the feeling you get. And that's why. And she's teasing him. She didn't want it, but she's teasing him. But in the movie, he seems charming, and she wasn't really, she kind of seemed interested in him a little bit. And yeah, so like why he killed her, it was just to kill her. Like, so that makes me think he was doing this more often than we think.
Yeah. I think the movie just doesn't, there's a lot of stuff it just doesn't put across as well. A lot of details it skips. For example, as we said, it skips a few details, which then causes it to only have two personalities instead of three, because it skips over certain things. You know, it skips certain details of his character, which means the murder almost, as you say there, doesn't make as much sense, you know. And I don't know. I've seen other Hitchcock movies and they've been kind of weird and slow and strangely paced as well. But he's supposed to be the master of suspense. Maybe this idea of starting the movie really slow and then speeding it all up towards the end was supposed to be something that excited, you know, the audience at that time. Yeah. the way it does kind of all happen quite quickly near the end. But I think if they just paced things a lot better, they could have actually included more things from the book, and it would have been a stronger movie.
Yeah, I think so. One thing that we hadn't really talked about is the soundtrack. Like, it's not really a lot of different songs, obviously, but when the movie starts,
oh my gosh, this
instantly you know, like, what is happening. Like, that is the perfect, like, music for a psychopath. Just,
yes, it is. It's almost stereotypical now, but I guess maybe this was a very early example of that, you know, that style for a psychopathic kind of character. But it's just that tense kind of, I don't even know how to describe it really, but it is perfect, you know, and it sort of sets the tone for it, for everything.
Yeah. And then one of the notes I put was money was like the telltale heart, I guess, when she gets the money and it's like, you know, kind of like the beating, the sound, you know, like she,
yes.
You know what I'm saying? I equated it to that poem, you know, because it's like driving her to do all this, and it's just it's there, and she keeps having to like move it and mess with it, and you know.
Yeah, it is interesting though, because obviously she's wrapping it up in newspaper, she's hiding it in plain sight and all this kind of stuff. I would have just kept it in the suitcase, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
The strangest thing is, you know, and you're right, in the book compared to the movie, you actually have more sympathy for her and for Norman than you do in the movie. I think in the movie, Sam's the only one that really seems like you would sympathize with him. But the strangest thing is, it is, you know, it is unusual. She supposedly worked that job for 10 years. You know, she's very trustworthy. Otherwise, they wouldn't let her have £40,000 just in her pocket or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very strange that she would just do this and suddenly disappear and take the money and run, you know? It seems like very out of character. And maybe neither the book or the movie really give me sufficient reason to think that that is something she would do.
Yeah. And like in the movie, they do a different scene where they don't have it in the book, where her boss may have seen her on the street.
That's weird.
And I was like, that didn't happen in the book, right?
Yeah, it didn't. No.
And you know, I think it, like, nowadays if I gave one of my employees $40,000 to take to the bank and they didn't make it, and then they're lost and no one can hear from them, I'm going to assume that someone saw me give them the money, or someone saw them with the money and took them.
Yeah.
And it's surprising that they didn't think that in this. They're just she stole it.
She says that she's sick or she's not feeling great. She's going to go straight home early after the bank. So she goes with the money. The boss sees her in the car, not at home, not sick, not at the bank, not, you know, just in her car.
Yeah.
And doesn't think anything of it. Yeah. And then later on, it's like, I haven't seen her since. Oh, no, hold on. I think I did see her in the car. Like, that's an unimportant detail. Like, what are you saying? You saw her fleeing with the money.
Yeah.
Like, the boss just is very uninterested in the fact that he saw her commit the crime, essentially.
Well, I think what they were trying to get over is that, like, you know how sometimes you see something, but you don't register that you see it?
Yeah.
I think that's what they were trying to get, is that she sees him. She knows it's him. And he, like, kind of looks, and then, you know, she's not an important person. She's not wealthy like he is. So he's just her employee. So he, like, sees, like, kind of past her. But then when he thinks about it, then he sees her and he's like, no, I did see her. And she was in a car. Why was she in a car? She was sick. Then he puts two and two together.
Yeah. I don't know if... If I'd given someone the day off sick and given them a lot of money and then seen them driving out of town in a car an hour later, I'd be like, hold on.
Yeah.
What's happening? But yeah, I don't know. Different times. Maybe he's trustworthy, you know, a trusting chap. The only other thing I really want to bring out is the very end. Because the very end, he's under arrest at that point. He's had the review Norman has with the psychiatrist. And at this point, I'm right here in thinking, aren't I, that the mother then takes over permanently as the dominant personality.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see the kind of struggle between Norman and Norma, because she, there's a quote from the book here, mother killed them. That's what he said, but it was a lie. You know, so the whole time he's saying the mother personality killed them and he's protecting it. But now the mother personality is saying, like, no, he's a bad boy. Like, I'm glad I'm rid of him now. The bad man and the bad boy are both dead, or else they're part of a dream. And she's going to be the one that's going to kind of dominate going forward. And she sees a fly and she says, well, I'm just going to sit here. I'm not going to move. I'm not going to do anything. And then they'll think, why? She wouldn't even harm a fly. You know, she's an innocent little old lady. But the curious thing is, and I thought it was almost funny, she says, you know, just to be on the safe side, maybe it's best to keep on pretending that one is a stuffed figure. So the fact that, you know, it was that stuffed figure with the clothes that wasn't really her, she's now almost saying, like, Norman, as Norma, is saying, I was pretending to be a stuffed figure, which means that Norman knew. It just gets a bit crazy now.
Yeah, it's like maybe he's hoping that, or she's hoping that if she just acts like she's okay, they'll eventually let her out. You know,
I guess
because they did before, so why wouldn't they now?
Why wouldn't they again? Yeah, I suppose that makes sense. It's supposed to be that when she died, Norman believed she was calling to him while he was in hospital the previous time, and that's why he dug her up. Like, you know, he thought that his dead mom was telepathically talking to him. So, and it's a very interesting case. I mean, I don't know how groundbreaking this book was when it first came out in terms of that kind of multiple personality thing. Like, I can't think of any examples of it really being dealt with to this level before, but it must have been a very powerful book and movie when they both first came out, you know, to be honest.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, like, I never seen or read anything like this, you know, and that's from that time. You know, and it is very eye-opening.
It is. And I should say, I do like the book and I do like the movie.
Yes.
My favorite, I think, though, has to be the book. What do you think?
After watching and reading both, I would say, yeah, the book is probably my favorite. Now, I will say, when I was, like, thinking of the characters, I had the Norman from the movie in my head, because I'd seen it before. I'd seen bits and pieces. And so when I was reading that he was supposed to be, like, plump and overweight, and I was like, that is not the Norman that I had in my mind. So, you know, I kind of did take, you know, because I hadn't read them or watched them before. So yeah. I would say that, yeah, the book was definitely my favorite. And even though I had knew what was happening, I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it is. And as we said, it, you know, it's quite short as well. It doesn't overstay its welcome either. You know, you're not reading through 700 pages to get to a twist you know is coming. It's very brief.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I agree. You know, I think the thing is, though, and this is, I guess, this is kind of why movies spoil books in general. You know, if you do a difference, because you're even reading the book now, or even while we've been talking, I'm picturing the characters from the movie, because it's just that it's that visual medium. You're picturing the one that you've seen. Whereas if you read the book without having seen the movie, you will picture it differently. And unfortunately, you know, that's just the way it is. I'm picturing the thin, more attractive, you know, Norman.
And
Mary's an interesting one, because they describe her as a, you know, she's supposed to be a, I guess she's pretty to an extent. Not, I don't think she's supposed to be anything special, but then in the book, she's got that weird 60s haircut. Oh, sorry, in the movie, she's got that little 60s kind of haircut. And I was like, oh, no, this isn't doing anything for me.
Yeah. They're not exactly what I would have pictured, I guess, the girls. No. But, you know, hey, they do a good description of them, I say. But now, if you had to rate the movie, what would you rate the movie out of 10?
I'm going to give it a 6, I think. 6 bloody knives out of 10.
Yes. I think I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. Lake full of cars. I think that
there could be 6 cars in that lake for all we know.
I think there should be. I think they should go dredge it and see what happens. But yeah, no.
You're saying
we both
went for 6. Yeah, I was thinking, say maybe at a push, I could say like 6.5. I just don't think it can be a 7. You know?
No, it's not a 7. So let me ask you this: what books are you guys reading for right now?
I'm just finishing up Persuasion, which is a Jane Austen.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's not one of the famous ones, obviously. It's not, you know, it's not Pride and Prejudice or whatever, but I'm just kind of working my way through Jane Austen. So I did the big ones. I did Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility on the last episode. And then I did Northanger Abbey, which was my favorite, but it's like her least popular. So now I'm doing the other Persuasion, and then there's still one or two others, but I'm going to spread them out over the next few episodes, maybe. And then I'm thinking of reading possibly Madame Bovary, which is a kind of a French novel set in that. I love this time period. I refer to it as a Victorian time period because that's what it was in England. And I know that it wasn't that in France, but it's around that time, that kind of 19th, 20th century kind of stuff. I really, really like that, you know?
Yeah. So why do you think that one's her least favorite, or least known, that but it's your favorite?
So I think, I don't know. The reason I like, so PJ had a theory that I only like Northanger Abbey because you need to have like pre-knowledge going in. Talks about like a lot of other novels of the time. There's a lot of Gothic stereotypes in it. It's essentially a satire of other novels. And he thinks that maybe, you know, if other people hadn't read those or whatever, they wouldn't have picked up on it. And then it changes halfway through and stops being that and becomes more your traditional kind of love story. But maybe at that time, like, people just wanted, you know, Sense and Sensibility or Pride and Prejudice. They're very simple, just love stories. So maybe that was just more what people were looking for, you know?
Well, I'm actually, we're going to be doing another book movie combo, but we're going to be interviewing the author that wrote it.
Wow. And what is it?
It's a very small movie. It's called Forever My Girl. And I've seen the movie. I didn't know it was a book. And I actually saw, she's on Book Talk on TikTok. It's like a subcategory of TikTok.
Yeah, I've been all over TikTok the last couple of weeks, posting lots of risque videos to try to bring the viewers in, the listeners in. You know?
Are you on Book Talk on TikTok?
Sometimes I do the hashtag Book Talk.
Well, you should join. There's a huge
Is there an
community.
Actual thing I need to join? Yeah, I'm still learning how this works.
Yeah, there's like a whole bunch of people, but she's one of the people that are on there. And one day she was doing a video and I was like, I've seen that movie. And I was like, I didn't know it was a book. And so I messaged her and was like, hey, would you want to be on? So she's going to be on and I'm really excited. So I'm reading that book right now, even though I've already seen the movie.
Do you know what I listened to your last couple episodes. I enjoyed Cruella, and I really enjoyed when you did the Audrey Hepburn one, actually.
Thank you.
My Fair Lady, because I love Audrey Hepburn. She is my goddess and my idol. I'm massively in love with her.
So was my friend. That's why she wanted to do it.
Have you guys, well, I guess if she likes her, she will have, but have you seen some other Audrey Hepburns?
No, I've wanted to see, like, Roman Holiday, she's in that, right?
Yeah.
Roman and Holiday Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Breakfast at Tiffany's would be the kind of two big ones, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I've never seen them. I do want to watch it, and we probably will. We went more guy movie this week. I do not recommend it. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible movie. That episode will be out on Tuesday.
I'm looking forward to
it. Awful.
If you're gonna do an Audrey Hepburn, the one that I recommend is Charade. Charade. Yeah, it's just it's a very, very fun movie. It's not as big, obviously, as, you know, Breakfast at Tiffany's or whatever, but it is. It's my favorite. But you know what? I just quickly looked at this TikTok. I did a slightly risque video, and all of a sudden, I got 20,000 views on it. But
wow.
I think that people think I'm a hot girl. It's not very clear in the video that I'm a guy. And I'm getting, and now I know what girls have to put up with online. I'm getting a lot of comments, you know, with like water squirting emojis and, you know, bury my face in it 32 minutes ago. A lot of things that I could do without on my notifications. So.
I have to go find that video now. But
if these people will listen to the show, I'm happy.
Yeah, I just do stuff for our podcast mostly, but I've
oh yeah,
tried
like
to...
everything I do relates, you know. I'll do all the popular trends, but then I have a book with them, you know, so like, I'll always kind of relate it to here's what's popular. I can jump on that trend, but then I'm reading a book because I need to like make it relevant, you know.
I like it. Yeah. I should go try it. What is your handle on there?
It's just at Books Boys Podcast.
Oh, okay. At Book Boys.
It's easy to find. Shall we quickly plug both of our things for our other listeners? So do you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. The easiest and most favorable for us is going to be our Instagram. So you can find us at Two Chicks Talkin' Flicks.
Oh, is that you're only going to plug the Instagram?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, I put all of our links and everything, so if you can find us at one, you can find us at all of them.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
When we're at Books Boys Podcast on Instagram, and similar, actually, I share everything on Instagram as well. It's a really kind of good hub, I find. Although the one I always just say to people is, if they just go to booksboys.com, then you've got links for everything, Spotify and Apple and whatever, so everything's all on there as well.
Yeah,
we've been fun.
Yes, I've really enjoyed it. I'm glad we finally got to do this.
I know, we tried so many times.
Well, it's hard, you know, being 6 hour difference, it makes it difficult.
I read the book and watched the movie twice, and then when as I say, when PJ was saying like, oh, if you wait a little longer I can join you, I was like, I can't do this a third time, like we gotta record now while it's fresh in my head.
Yeah, that's why I always take notes, and I try to like be kind of detailed, so then I don't have to like watch something again, though I do like watching stuff more than once, but you know, some of them I have to pay for, and I don't want to pay for it a third time or whatever.
Definitely not.
So, all right. Well, that's all I have.
That's us, yeah.
Well, I super enjoyed this. Hopefully we can do something again and nail down the time.
Yeah, I think what we should do, if we can ever get all of us together, is we should do American Psycho. That seems like the natural follow-up. And it's I prefer it, actually.
Yes. I feel like that book is a really long book. Is it super long?
Oh, no. I mean, it's longer than Psycho, but I think it's like 300 pages. It's not like, you know, it's not Dickens long or you know, Harry Potter long or something like that. It's longer, but it's a relatively standard length kind of novel.
For some reason, I thought it was...
The music in that movie and just the Christian Bale being a sexy so-and-so, you know, I want to do that.
Yeah, I've seen like bits and pieces of that movie as well, but I've never watched like the whole thing.
Oh, well, you should. You should. Everyone should. Well, I think that's us. Look, this has been great, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Yes, bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.